In fact, 13 people signed up to run for governor of Oregon. We're not even supposed to have an election this year, but under Oregon law, the departure of a governor early in his or her term triggers an election for the back half of that term. John Kitzhaber left just a month into his fourth term, so we have an election for a two-year term for governor. Incumbent Kate Brown is running for the Democratic nomination. Our next guest wants to represent the Independent Party of Oregon in November. He is Cliff Thomason, who's lived in the Grants Pass area from his boyhood onward, graduating from North Valley High School. He's worked primarily as a real estate agent. Cliff Thomason, thanks for joining us on The Exchange.
Thank you.
So you've never held elective office before, but you have tried, I understand, right?
I did try 8 years ago, but no, I haven't tried for a state office before.
Okay. So let's talk about the things you stand on your website right off the bat. There's this reference to the Kitzhaber crew. You paint Kate Brown with the same brush as her predecessor.
Well, and she does. It follows a long line of what we've seen going on in Oregon, and there is no difference, really, between her, Kitzhaber, Kulongowski. You know, they follow the same trend, and it's not necessarily a good one.
So your website makes it sound conspiratorial, especially when you bring up the race for Secretary of State and say the establishment, capital E, is behind this. So who's the establishment? Who's in charge?
Well, the Democratic Party. You know, we're basically a one-party state, or have been for quite a while. Republicans have been in the minority to such a point that they can't seem to get anything through, and anything on the Democratic agenda makes its way through without any problem. So, you know, I think that what we've seen, you know, especially, you know, indication in the Secretary of State's race, that some great candidates, and any one of them could be running for governor. But as we've seen, it's finally shaping up as a stepping stone. You know, the one person fails, it's next man up. And that's what we've seen with Kate Brown stepping into Kitzhaber's shoes, and with Val Hoyle, Brad Avakian, and Richard Devlin, you know, mm-hmm. any one of them qualified to step up into that place and carry on the agenda that's been pushed through.
The Secretary of State's race seems only slightly less crowded than the governor's race. Did you think about running for that as a stepping stone to the governor's office? I mean, it's an interesting place to start, isn't it?
It is. No, with the Independent Party gaining major party status, it was an opportunity, you know, to give people a third choice. For the first time in Oregon's history, people will have three choices in November rather than just a standard two. And I think people have, you know, decided that they like that. Come November, due to motor voter, we're going to see the largest voter base being non-affiliated. By the time November comes around, the Republicans will be down to about 20%. Democrats about 30%, so at least 50% who don't want to belong to either party and are going to vote their conscience rather than their party.
All right, so party identifications and theories of connections between people aside, I mean, you talk about failed policies on your website. What are the things that have gone wrong in Oregon in your mind?
Well, I mean, we can point to, you know, some real recent things. They just passed a minimum wage law that was, you know, regionalized, and your worth for the same work is based on where you live and not the work you do. I think ultimately it's going to be proven unconstitutional, but we've seen a pattern of where they'll pass laws that later prove to be unconstitutional. We see that with PERS, and that's why we're in a $20 billion, you know, deficit in that. That's going to come due next year. You know, but like on the minimum wage law, there is no way that the value of my daughter's work is less than a man in Portland, and vice versa. You can't discriminate against people just based on where they live. And I think all Oregonians deserve a fair wage, and that's not the approach that Oregon's been known for, fair and equitable protections.
So do you wish the minimum wage had been higher for all equally, or do you wish there'd been no increase in the minimum wage? Or is
well, I think that there's, you know, that Oregonians deserve a fair starting wage, you know, throughout. And if we're going to say that the cost of living, cost of housing in Portland is too high, then we need to look at releasing areas like Portland or Eugene, populations of, let's say, 150,000 or more, and allow them to set their own policy. Because the state tends to throw a broad blanket over all of Oregon, where we're, you know, saying this policy is good for this place, so it must be good for everywhere else. And that's just not the case. And I think that we don't need a patchwork of wages that we're seeing in other states. But when we're looking at two major population bases, you know, and again, with Portland Metro and with Eugene, perhaps we should look at letting them decide for themselves rather than crossing county lines. Right now, we're based on counties. The wages are changing.
Right. So Jackson, Josephine have the one level. Douglas County, neighboring, is one level down.
Right. And how do we say that someone in Roseburg has a lesser value than someone in let's say Ashland? You know, for the same work, we should get the same pay. We make that argument over years that women deserve the same equal pay as men. But yet now we're saying certain people, based on where they live, are worth less than others. And I think that's discriminatory, and I think that'll end up playing out that way. And we can let all of Oregon decide the wages. In 2002, Measure 25, the voters put the initiative out. The voters passed the most progressive minimum wage law in the United States, and we've normally been at the top. So the voters decided it, and it's been a really good thing, you know, for Oregon.
And it does go up with inflation,
yeah,
as it did this year.
But that's the thing, what we see in with the current administration and past ones is that we tend to look at tackling the symptoms of the problem rather than the problem itself. The problem is affordable housing, and yet we say, well, let's just raise the wages, and that's going to fix that problem. The reality is the more you make, the more landlords will charge you for rent. So it never fixes the real problem, just a symptom of it.
Cliff Thomason is from Grants Pass. He is an Independent Party of Oregon candidate for governor. You can join the conversation at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Bill and Eugene. Welcome to The Exchange.
Hi, I'd like to ask the gentleman one question. I'll take a little to get to it, but I totally disagree with him as far as landlords will charge more the more the people can afford. First off, they charge more when their taxes go up. And Oregon's one of three states that don't have a sales tax, and that's why we're always having problems. Oregon's second or third biggest industry is tourism or high tech. And we only get a sales tax, we only get a restaurant tax, and we only get a room tax from all the RVers, and we're number one RV in the country, and all the people come here to get our products cheap, and we're losing out. And Republican Barnhart, Eugene, I met with him at a big meeting in Eugene.
Given the amount of time we have,
I'll get to your question. Reference the guy who's talking about saving the planet. Why don't we have a tax that doesn't tax anything people need? You don't get pay a tax on energy to heat your house. Anything you buy used that's not polluting, like a car or a lawnmower, you don't pay tax. Anything medical, as long as it isn't for bigger breasts or a nicer nose, you don't pay a tax for anything edgy, anything you read.
So a sales tax.
Education.
A sales tax on everything that is, yeah, anything that's not necessary. Okay.
Well, I think that, that's what we do. We always look at taxing things rather than, cutting other things that are a little more wasteful. I think, when we look at, historically, we have thrown sales taxes on things people don't need. We have tobacco tax, the state controls the alcohol. And so, we do that on a regular basis, and I'm sure that's going to continue.
Schools. Let's talk about the education. True graduation rates are very low compared to other states, as you point out. What do we do about that?
Well, what we do is we put people in charge, number one, that, come from education and education administration and not just, from a union negotiator, which is what Kate Brown currently did, is put the head of education in place with no education background. Again, the broad blanket over everyone. We need to give local control to school districts to better administer, programs that are going to increase, graduation. Every year, we're in flux of how much to give them. Well, we've seen that throwing money at the problem doesn't solve the problem, and we need to look at it in a different way. And I think giving local school districts more control over their curriculum and the way that they go about educating will increase, graduation.
Diminishing of local control, though, came with diminishing of local property taxes. So we're talking about higher taxes with more local control?
And that's possible. I think the local communities would support higher taxes if they decrease the dropout rate, the homelessness that, comes with it. We're facing, major public education cuts next year if we don't solve this PERS liability that we have coming up. But, knowing that we have one out of three students dropping out, I look at a program where by the end of their second year in high school, every student will pass a GED. Sort of like the university system where you have associate's degree and you have a bachelor's degree. Give them, two tiers to shoot for. Make sure everyone is prepared to go out into the workforce or higher education after 2 years, knowing that they're fully functional with a general education diploma, and they could strive for a high school diploma. And I think that that's something that we should seriously look at and prepare our students and our children a little better.
Cliff Thomason is running for the Independent Party of Oregon nomination for governor. He's from the Grants Pass area. You say about crime that violent crime is on the rise. The FBI shows a downward trend in Oregon from 2010 to 2014. Numbers aside, what role do you think the state should play that it doesn't now?
Well, the state's been doing a great job in rural Oregon and rural communities where, you know, we've had huge cuts in public safety.
Particularly Josephine County, where you're from.
Yeah. Without Oregon State Police, Josephine County would be, you know, more of the Wild West than it already is. You know, what we're not looking at, you know, on a statewide basis, when we're looking at crime reporting, if you don't have deputies on the patrol, if you don't have police forces that are, you know, complete, you're not going to get the reporting that would show, you know, where the crime is. It's the unreported crimes currently that, you know, I have more concern with, because people aren't calling in. There's no one to answer the call. Call into Josephine County Sheriff and get someone on the line. Good luck. It just doesn't happen.
Because of the crash in Timber Dollars, and nobody will, at least up till now, nobody has passed an act to go ahead and raise the property taxes to pay for that. Let's talk about lottery money. You're the chief petitioner of the Lottery Local Control Act. What is that?
Well, that's a statewide initiative that would direct half the lottery dollars back to the counties they came from. You know, right now, counties throughout Oregon are not receiving, you know, a fair share of the money that was generated locally. And I think that, again, local control of money is very important. You look at Multnomah County, for example, our largest county. For every dollar they send into the lottery division, they only receive 28 cents on the dollar back. And, you know, up and down the I-5 corridor, it's less than 40 cents on the dollar back, and you have no control of where that money's spent. I think that, you know, for Jackson County, for example, you know, they would receive about $11 million a year. And I think local officials can do a better job on distributing that between public education, public safety, job creation, more than the state does. And what we found through this initiative process is that the state has found a way to skim almost 25% right off the top of lottery dollars to go to debt servicing. So, for example, in the last biennium, Department of Transportation received almost 10% of lottery dollars. I don't think that helps our schools. And even though they throw that under the guise of economic development, really that's not creating any jobs. It's maintaining jobs. And so I think locals can do better with that money.
Okay, there's a couple of questions I'm going to ask of all candidates for statewide office, which is public retiree pensions will take a huge bite out of the state budget in the next biennium, bigger than it did this time around. How do you address that shortfall caused by PERS, the public employee retirement system?
Well, the current administration is hoping that IP28, the, you know, corporate sales tax, you know, gets on the ballot for November and passes. So another tax as the solution for the PERS liability. I'd like to task the PERS investment board with doing better. By law, they're supposed to maximize the return, and it's just not getting done. They're following the same pattern as other Wall Street investors, and we're just going with the ebbs and flows of the market rather than taking a more aggressive stance and getting a higher return. If we can task them to just increase return by 1%, would be $6 billion a year. We would completely wipe out the PERS deficit within 4 years. You know, in 2005, Ted Kulongowski went to the Lottery Commission and said, hey, I need $135 million. We need to fund Oregon State Police. You guys need to do better. And they did. Within 3 years, it was over $300 million a year. And so we need to look into our internal processes and maximize return first before going to the, you know, to the people and raising taxes.
Just got a minute left here. You talk about green jobs, agricultural jobs. Hemp is among the products you support. What are your thoughts on marijuana?
Well, I think, you know, all cannabis is something to be supportive. I travel around and spend a lot of time at, you know, hemp and cannabis fairs. And, you know, it's great to see new entrepreneurs, business owners, employees, inventors. And, you know, it's the greatest opportunity for job creation and creating industry and wealth in Oregon. And I think that it's something that should be supported. And right now we're overregulated in the industry, and we need to open it up so more people can prosper. And that's why I support the creation of an Oregon State Bank, so that we can give, you know, opportunities, protections, and privileges to everyone in Oregon, especially in the cannabis industry.
In other words, there'd be banking available for
absolutely.
The industry.
Absolutely.
Which there isn't now. All right. Cliff Thomason is from the Grants Pass area, and he's running for the Independent Party of Oregon nomination for the Oregon Governor's Office. The election, obviously, that's part of the primary. You don't have to be registered with the Independent Party to actually cast a vote in the independent primary.
No, but if you're not affiliated, you got to go to your county clerk and request a ballot, and you can vote for the independent party.
Okay. You have to register by tomorrow. Tuesday is registration deadline for the May 17th primary. Cliff Thomason from Grants Pass, thanks for joining us on The Exchange.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure to have you.